The purpose of this hearing is to allow the committee to gather information that is relevant to making a judgment in response to Mr. Ittner's appeal of the EO finding on procedural grounds and regarding the sanction imposed. As a reminder, this finding was as follows, and I'm quoting here from the February 9th investigation report by Ms. McMahon. A preponderance of evidence exists to conclude that the posters were sufficiently serious and objectively offensive to constitute a violation of the equal opportunity policy. Several students and faculty reported concerns about them. Ittner was also persistent in reposting posters after they had been taken down. While a college campus is an environment that supports the exchange of ideas, the nature of the messages Ittner posted were disturbingly and seriously offensive, close quote. The investigation thus found that this created a hostile environment based on sexual orientation for members of the Carroll community. To fulfill our function, we are seeking information on aspects of this finding to evaluate whether the procedures used were correct and whether the sanction was appropriate. That is our mandate. For our understanding of the relevant legal structure, several factors are irrelevant to our purpose and will not be discussed in this hearing. The first of these is intent. We cannot take into account the motives behind creating and putting up the posters, only the impact they had on those who saw them. Similarly, it is not in our purview to evaluate or debate the degree to which the text of the posters conforms to the doctrines of the Catholic Church. As a result, discussion of Mr. Ittner's intentions or consistency with Catholic doctrine will be considered out of order if these subjects come up in response to any questions that we ask. The second broad area not relevant to this hearing are the events and substance of the student conduct issues related to Mr. Ittner's compliance with any other campus policy, or the conduct issues related to his interactions with Carroll administrators. Those are irrelevant. We are focused here only on issues related to Carroll's equal opportunity policy as they relate to the creation of a hostile environment based on a protected category, in this case, sexual orientation. We would like to set, and we need to set, a few ground rules for this hearing. The claimant, the respondent, and witnesses are bound by this agenda, which is off by 5 minutes because we had to start late while waiting for Mr. Ittner. There we go. Good show those eyes on the end of the Okay, we're tied to the agenda, which can be varied only by a member of the committee. If a member of the committee calls for recess, the times on the agenda will automatically adjust again for the length of the recess. Answers to questions must be confined to the content of the question. Permission to bring up information not directly in answer to the question must be requested from the committee. The claimant, respondent, and witnesses will not interrupt each other or members of the committee. And finally, advisors have no speaking role and communicate only by note from this point on.
Can we have some notes we can use to send notes or not?
You'd like some paper, blank paper?
Well, we'd like to talk, and that would be a lot faster.
Yeah, it'd be hard to stay to the agenda if I have to stop and write things down.
But that's the standard for the hearings.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll be out of order a lot more than we thought then.
All right. So, are there any other questions about the hearing or our agenda? Okay, we'd like to open up then with Mr. Ittner's opening statement.
Yeah, so basically, what exactly are we allowed to talk about? Because you kind of said we're not allowed to talk about the content of the posters, but then you said that we're supposed to talk about, you know, if they're harassment and, you know, if they're out of order and stuff, right?
Okay, let me reiterate. We're not talking about the intent behind the posters or about its conformity to Catholic doctrine.
Because it seems like the conformity is extremely relevant. Seems like that's what matters here, because if it's found that they are in conformity with the Catholic Church, then that means the college was violating my rights by taking them down and by doing this whole process against me.
And I understand from your appeal that you were considering filing an EO grievance around that issue, but to my knowledge that is not filed. That's actually irrelevant to this hearing.
No, it's not. It can't be.
But it is.
But it can't be.
The policy of the school.
Can someone else explain it? Someone else here? Because you're not really doing your job, it seems like.
Okay, that is... Can I say something?
Absolutely.
Accusing me of not doing my job is out of order.
Not if it's true. You're saying it's out of order to say something that's true.
Let Ms. McMahon speak to policy.
Yeah, so the grounds of appeal are limited to three different areas. You've appealed, from what I understand, on two of those three. One is procedural error and one is the sanctioning. So what this committee is charged to do is to find on your grounds of appeal. If you wish to file your own discrimination claim under the equal opportunity policy, that's a whole separate process under this course. Separate from this one. Same policy, different issue. So those are the grounds of
appeal. Okay, because I think part of the whole thing of the sanctions were appropriate is if the college acted appropriately when they made those sanctions.
That would be if you wanted to file a discrimination claim. Right now what the determination is the complaint from the school is that the posters created a hostile environment. And so what this committee has to gauge is whether or not a preponderance of evidence existed on if those posters were objectively offensive to a reasonable person.
And they couldn't, but that's why, if they're teachings of the Catholic Church, then that would be saying that they are, and if they're found to be offensive, it's all related, because if they're found to be offensive, then that would mean that the teachings of the Catholic Church are offensive. It's all related. You can't escape part of it. The past, almost 2 months, everything the college has been doing is skirting the issues of if these posters are actually Catholic, because if they are actually Catholic teaching, then the college is completely wrong in everything they're doing.
Then I hate to encourage people, but I would encourage you then to file a grievance based on any religious...
That won't do any good if I'm expelled from the college, though, will it?
So that's a different grievance, so that's not the scope of this grievance.
So you're saying if I am expelled from the college, as will very likely happen when they finish looking through and discarding my appeal to the whole student conduct thing, are you saying I would still be allowed to file a EO grievance?
No.
No? Why not?
Separate issue. Should we proceed?
No, I'm asking a question. Why would I not be allowed to file an EO grievance then?
Should we proceed with this grievance?
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're going to...
So you're not answering my questions. All right. Well, that's on the recording I'm making, so that's good.
Are you recording?
Yes. I don't have to tell you under law. I don't have to tell you if I'm recording.
Recess?
Okay. Yes. Where do you call a 5-minute recess?
Excuse. Skylar and Heather, please.
Yes, and you're excused for the 5 minutes. We'll reconvene at 1:20. At that point, I will ask you, Ms. Rittner, if you're done with your statement.
Can you please take your computer and
Why?
Any other recording? Because this is in confidence, please. I'm sorry, Dean, I'm overstepping my boundaries.
They took my bag out too in case I had a recording in there. Wow. So apparently we can't talk about it if it's Catholic Church teaching. We can't talk about it if we can't talk about the content of the posters.
And
we have
can't
to talk
about why
if
you hung up the posters.
But
we can't talk about what's in them or why you hung them up.
We just have to talk about if someone
the
got offended.
That you hung the posters up.
We just
hung
yeah, all we can talk about is that someone got offended by them and doesn't like me.
But not
nothing
they
else
said
works.
Or why you did it.
Yeah, apparently.
Oh, this will be a short meeting.
Well, now they'll just, we'll keep dragging out until they just say we're out of order and dismiss the whole thing.
Yeah.
We have no other choice.
So then what are the witnesses going to say? My feelings were hurt.
Well,
I was offended.
I mean, and
but we can't talk about what's in it.
Well, and why is Father here if he's not? I mean, what's he supposed to talk about?
We're not allowed to talk about the intention or content of the posters and how they relate to Catholic teaching. So.
I
know.
We'll be here to answer whatever questions.
Well, it can't be Catholic questions. Okay. Not allowed to talk about it.
Yeah, because apparently that's if I want to file a separate grievance, which I won't be able to because our college is expelling me, so I won't be able to at that point. Which is weird because prospective students can still file claims and stuff against colleges. That's happened before. Mm-hmm. I know that in my research I did. Mm-hmm. So when he wasn't a student but was visiting mm-hmm. a college, they were a little.
I
file
should file
things.
A grievance against that poster in Marine Moore's office. That is really offensive. So where's your law backup?
No, it's in the it's the same thing from that one meeting, you know, where there's nothing under anything really that says we can't.
Why?
Because it's not an electronic thing. It's just it's us with a room. Like if there's it basically like if they it's really well, pretty much all the laws only apply if you're like wiretapping people. They don't actually apply just having a recording device.
Well, you need to be able to back that up.
Yep, it's in all the papers and stuff. It's, you know, the federal law is on one-party consent. State law, most of the law on recording only applies to electronic communications and not to in-person communications with a recording device. Mm-hmm. And they should just be able to assume that any computer with, you know, a webcam and stuff, like a computer can record.
Maybe my teacup's recording.
Exactly. I mean, it can make a recording device that's less than a postage stamp, you know, in size. Mm-hmm. And stick it somewhere, that's something anyone really with some electronic knowledge can do. For under $50 of hardware from eBay. Talk to them after they finish the recess thing.
I can't believe. So where's your letter that Renee? Like where's the email?
I have all the paper stuff and all that.
No, well I know, but what did she say was the point of this meeting stuff? Because I cannot believe that you're not allowed to discuss your intent or content of posters.
Yeah,
isn't that
that's
the whole point of the meeting?
Yeah, it is, but they're skirting it like they always have.
I know. They and won't answer the question.
I know.
So when you're a philosophy teacher,
yeah.
Did that long rant against the Catholic teaching on same-sex marriage?
Apparently that none.
You should have filed.
Yeah, well, apparently the content of that wouldn't have mattered, though.
Well, it would have mattered if you filed the grievance. It matters. It's who files the grievance is the one who gets to talk about it. The other person is not allowed to defend it. That's what they said.
It's not retaliation.
Under what grounds would you be able to file that?
Yeah, exactly.
We're ready to respond. Okay, as we reconvene, I want to make a couple of comments. First of all, I am a very precise speaker, 99.9% of the time. And I know you were concerned about not being able to bring up Catholic teaching. The framework where I mentioned that was in response to our questions. To the extent that this is relevant for your statement, for your comments about the sanctions specifically, welcome to do that. But it is not relevant to the fundamental EO complaint or the procedures issues as far as this hearing is concerned.
But it is, because this is the Catholic College. So of course it's relevant.
Have you read the EO policy of the school?
I've read several conflicting EO policies of the school, actually. You guys have two different versions of the same document that have some minor inconsistencies.
Right.
Like this panel is actually supposed to have five people on it, but it only has three.
I believe Dr. McMahon has discussed that with you.
Not really. Not really.
But can I focus back on the reason for the hearing? Which is the violation of the EO policy. Therefore, our questions are going to be focused on procedural matters related to EO policy and whether the sanction was appropriate. The question of Catholic doctrine has some bearing to that, and in that case, we'll be asking you and Father Mark questions along those lines. Okay. Good enough. You have 5 minutes to finish your opening statement.
So basically the posters are, they can't, I mean, and I've made this very clear from the beginning and people just ignored me or dismissed it as, you know, not relevant to whatever we're currently talking about, but basically the posters, if you think they are discriminatory, you are extremely misguided as to what that word means. I mean, I don't even know, like, the prison complaint. I don't even know her until, I never even knew her name or who she was until I got a thing saying, oh, yes, you discriminated against her. Look at this. So, it's really absurd. And to say that the poster is discriminated because of, what, sexual orientation, that is also false, because nothing in them was against sexual orientation. They were all against certain actions taken by people who just usually happen to be of a certain sexual orientation. They are very clear to address, they very clearly address the actions of people and not what they are, or who they are, or their sexual orientation, or their gender, or anything like that. So to say that they violated some kind of sexual orientation thing is just blatantly, like a blatant lie. And there are many other lies also in Ray McMahon's report of this whole thing, like just things that are just false. So, and as to the, you know, whole thing here, so according to this document I was sent in the mail, right? Yeah, by Ray McMahon, it says the Equal Opportunity Grievance Committee shall have five members. But I just like to point out that in the student in this document, there's another very similar document online that also says that on the Carroll website. Then in the student handbook, the copy of the EO grievance policy in there says three members. And I just like to show this. It's one of those, one of many procedural error type things that I've seen. And that this just doesn't make sense. So. Oh, and the composition of the board is also just wrong, because there shouldn't be, it should be three faculty members and a staff member, or what? Okay, it's really hard for me to understand her because she has to write everything down, and we don't have time. But it should be two faculty, and if it is just three people, it should be two faculty members and a staff member. So.
May I comment on that?
Mm-hmm.
It's my understanding, and I was forwarded a copy of an email where Ms. McMahon agreed that you were correct on that procedural error and offered to scrap this entire committee.
Yeah,
and start
but I
over.
Yes, I know, and there was no way I could do that, because then by the time it was rescheduled, as I'm sure you're probably aware, the appeal I made to the student conduct process would have been rejected, as I know it will be, because it's not like it actually makes a difference in the process. That would have been thrown out and it would have been expelled, which means I wouldn't have been able to partake in this whole thing. Had no choice. I was coerced. I had no choice because of the way the college works, apparently.
Any further remarks?
So why are there two versions of this policy? Why are there two separate versions that conflict and contradict each other and that are current? Why are there two different current versions?
Okay, we will ask Ms. McMahon to address that question when we are asking her for evidence.
All right.
Yeah. I guess I should make that very clear in case neither Dr. Rice nor Mr. Itner have a right to question any of the witnesses in this hearing. You can certainly propose questions for us to ask, as like this one.
I can ask questions anyways, they just don't have to respond.
Right, in fact, they are not to respond. That's rather my point. But you're welcome to pose questions that you would like us to ask, like that one.
Dean, could I ask a clarifying question?
Yes.
By Skyler's statement, is he consenting to proceed then with the student?
I obviously want to be here, otherwise,
excuse me.
Yeah.
Excuse me. My question was to me. And if I have the agreement of my committee members, Skyler's continued presence indicates that he's willing to accept the jurisdiction of this committee.
Only under duress. I'd just like to make that clear. If I said no and wanted to reschedule, I wouldn't be able to reschedule. This is the only chance I get, even though it is wrong. You know, this pod is the only chance I have. I've been forced into this meeting here. I would have rescheduled if I had the ability to, but I knew if I did, then this would not be taking place because the other appeal would have been completed already.
And I just wanted to also clarify, are we still recording?
Oh,
yep.
We're recording, and we've now brought a school recorder.
I'm sorry, my fault. We got back in and we got going. We did put the recorder on in terms of you'll have a copy and then we'll have an official copy for Carroll College as well. Thank you for asking. I apologize for not bringing that to your attention. It's clearly right in the middle of the table.
Yeah, that's all right. According to the state laws, as long as it's you know, not like a hidden recorder or something, and you know, it's fine. So,
Dean.
Yes.
I just want to go on the record. I do not consent to the recording.
You don't have to. Knowledge of the recording is enough by under law.
And it's
so.
Not a part of Carroll.
It's state law.
We.
Okay. Recess.
Recess, please. Can you stay and talk about the law, please? I'd like everyone else to about recording.
There's actually a copy of the law, just if you'd like to see it. And there's no Carroll policy against recording either, as far as I can tell. Leave the recording. I have my laptop in here.
Turn it off.
It's not hard to find. It's literally all on the internet. Like, you can just go through. It's the state government website.
You have to read in order to do that, I guess. So.
Well, yeah, if they think the post is discrimination, they obviously can't read.
It's supposed to confiscate that money. Interested in that.
It's posted without permission.
Yeah, that's
okay.
weird thing is, like, way back on the 30th, like, they admitted that if, like, the message was put up on my computer screen sitting in a lobby, they wouldn't be able to take it down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's something else you're not allowed to talk about.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, if he thinks he's a precise speaker 99.9% of the time, is that the 0.1% he wasn't precise?
Yeah.
Is that what he was trying to say? And can we get a validation of the 0.1%? Let's not read the laws.
Well, the whole thing's about feeling.
It is all about feelings, isn't it?
Just go stand by the door and do what you take. Yeah, why is he so mad at me?
Because he's drunk.
Yeah, apparently. Be like, I moved to. Right, this is just recording.
Oh, it's recording us?
Yeah, it's recording. I didn't stop. That way we have continuity, so you can tell it's not, like, edited or anything.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still not clear on what you're allowed to talk about.
I think we just talk about stuff and then they'll object and we'll say, well, no. And then we'll keep talking. Maybe they're walking fast because they only give themselves 5-minute recesses. So.
Well, now they're going to read the thing about recording how it causes distress. You're not allowed to do it. So that might be, somebody says it's going to cause them distress, then you would have to stop on campus.
Well, at this point, I'm already expelled, so it doesn't make a difference to me.
That's true.
And I'll just say, I stopped, so I'll just do this, and they won't tell.
No,
they tell. Good.
Not
really. Well, yes, but they've
saying,
done enough lying.
They say if it causes distress. So if she goes in there now and says recording is going to cause distress, then you have to stop.
No, because it wouldn't actually be causing her distress. You'd just be being scared of somebody recording you because you're wrong is not the same thing.
Well, yeah, are you going to say so?
Well, yeah,
because I think that's
going
to happen.
Yeah, they're totally
because they
do
got
that.
The student
yeah.
handbook.
Although the context
it.
Of that is like sexual harassment, though. That's the whole thing. Like it's like recording, like peeping Tom
I know,
stuff.
Like
that's what it's.
Stuff. Yeah. I understand.
Yeah. I searched the whole PDF that we're recording.
Okay.
Let's see. Recordings of students.
So.
Anyone who does not provide notice that they don't want to be recorded is deemed to have consented. That's for like college taking pictures of people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's funny, like, because the rules are written so the college can do promotional stuff. So it's actually written so that to make recording easy to do.
Right. But here, so I have this in
the okay.
regarding discharge for serious cause. Four reasons they can discharge faculty: continued serious disrespect or disregard
yeah.
for the Catholic character or mission of the college.
Okay, we are restarting our device. Mr. Ritter, the quote you give from the student policy handbook is accurate, we verified it. And so the relevant phrase is recording someone without his or her consent when such a recording is likely to cause injury or distress. So I have to ask you, Ms. Rice, does your objection mean that such a recording would cause you distress or injury?
Yes, if improperly used.
Well, it won't be improperly used. It'll be put up on the internet. Because that's just, you know, transparency and stuff, but it won't be improperly used.
Okay.
Like, I guess improper usage, I'd have to assume by the rules, would be something like editing it to make it into sexual harassment or something, because the rule is written in that context of like sexual harassment and that sort of thing.
The rule just says it's pretty clear and it's your
but it, you know, but then it was right on to talk about intimate parts or sexual conduct, so it seems like that's what was in mind when they wrote it.
But the exact words are,
yes, I have the exact words.
Consent,
yeah.
Or without consent, when such recording is likely to cause him or her injury or distress. And do these circumstances qualify as causing you injury or distress?
Currently, yes. And
okay, you'll have to read it off.
No. Because that's BS. I'm sorry, but that's BS. She's sitting in a... How is it injuring you
please
or causing you distress to have evidence of your
questions.
Actions?
Please do not direct questions to Dr. Rice. You may direct them... You may
okay, ask her.
Questions.
Ask her how the hell she thinks that's distressing. To be sitting in a room, having her actions documented when she chose to be here.
We just did, and she answered the question. We've asked you to turn off the recording.
All right. I've noted that.
So you need to turn off the recording, or we will not proceed.
Or what? What if I don't turn off the recording?
We will not proceed.
We will not proceed.
What, are you guys going to... Wayne, it's not against the rules of this. It's against like the other rules of the college. You'd have to then sanction me separately, wouldn't you? And also, what about your recording? Is your recording distressful? Is it causing her distress?
It's an official recording for the college.
Okay, so so you have two recordings, literally like a foot and a half apart from each other on a table. One of them is distressing, and the other one is not because someone else has it. I mean, it's a stupid.
Because ours is not going anywhere other than for record of this meeting.
What am I allowed to?
You have already stated.
Can you prove that it's not going anywhere?
Going to
not
your
on.
I'm sorry. That's assaulting. That's assault. You're threatening me with a hammer.
A gavel?
Yeah. I mean, that you could hurt someone with that. That scared me a little there. That was shocking. I think I'm in distress. I think I'm feeling distressed now.
Please turn off your recording, or we will not proceed.
Can you prove that your recording won't go anywhere? Because it's going to be uploaded to a computer, right? And once
no,
it's on a computer,
not.
So it's going to stay on that device forever. It's not going to go anywhere else.
Until the hearing is completed, then it will just be
okay.
Deleted.
Well, this. So what's the point of it then? Why are you even recording it all then? If it's just going to be deleted, and not going to go anywhere. I mean, this whole thing. It's just because someone says it'll cause distress doesn't mean it will. She could just be lying because it's
her
convenient.
Right.
It's her right, but to say stuff, that doesn't mean it's her right to have us believe her all the time. I mean...
Until we turn it off, everything is...
Go.
Have you turned off the recording?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is there any way we can verify that? I don't know.
I'm not comfortable with you guys going through my computer.
No, but you could shut it down.
No, I have evidence and notes on it that I'd like to refer to during this process. Now, so you're saying that I'm not allowed to have evidence with me on this computer. There's stuff that I haven't printed out because of the sheer volume of it, so I have all the emails and things.
You've certified that it's shut off.
Yeah, I've said that.
Okay. I think we take Mr. Rittner's word and proceed. Unless either of the committee members have any objection. proceed? Have you completed your statement?
Well, you guys have shot down everything I said. I don't think there's much of a point in saying anything else.
Okay. I will comment. We will pose the question to Ms. McMahon about the two policies. However, it is not within our competence to judge the procedure for forming the committee. We're here to judge the investigation.
Well, that is a part of the investigation, is it not? I mean, it isn't part of the investigation.
No, the original investigation. The original investigation.
You say you're all very precise and clear-spoken, but so far this is a pretty big 99. You know, that 99% seems pretty small, and the 1% that you're not seems pretty big.
I have no idea what you're referring to.
You said that you speak precisely 99% of the time. Did you not?
I understand that. What I'm asking is, I don't understand what you find inconsistent.
Well, it just seems like you're being very imprecise this whole meeting so far.
You're welcome to your opinion on that. We'll proceed. Do you have questions for Mr. Ritner? I will ask you that question in a little bit. But right now, this is our chance to ask questions. Based on his opening statement or any other information we've received, I'll pose the question about, you brought up the concern that these actions were not discriminatory, specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Where in the policy, the specifics of the policy, do you find that making statements that a reasonable person might...
I don't think a reasonable person would find them offensive.
Okay, well, that's
I don't think there's any reasonable people in this room except for me and my mother, honestly. I think you should get Father Mark in here and he can maybe comment on the posters and, you know, because he's reasonable and he has a strong grasp of Catholic teaching since he's a priest.
Right.
And since some of them are direct quotes from the Catechism of the Catholic Church, seems like maybe he should talk about them.
In answer to your question, Father Mark is here because we've called him as a witness.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, no, I'm just maybe saying you should bring him in as a witness now and, you know, use him since he's here.
We will.
So, I mean, the fact remains that a good fair number of my posters were directly quoting the Catholic Church, teachings of the Catholic Church, and that's all. So if the posters are found to be discriminatory, that means the teachings of the Catholic Church are discriminatory. And if you guys say that, then you can be fired under the faculty conduct rules of the college for taking, for basically being anti-Catholic. And let's see, a quote here. A quote from Tom Evans. Yeah, quote from Tom Evans. It says, "The handbook enumerates four reasons for which a college may discharge unit faculty for serious cause, one of which is, quote, continued serious disrespect or disregard for the Catholic character or mission of the college." So, I mean, if you guys find that the posters are discriminatory, that means you find the Catholic Church discriminatory, which would be actions against the Catholic character or mission of the college, because you're saying the mission of the college is to be discriminatory. If the mission of the college is to, you know, uphold the Catholic Church, which is my understanding, that's part of it. So they can't be discriminatory. You guys should, in all respects, be fired. And that's really what I was thinking about earlier when I said, you know, they talked about, you know, not doing your job. I mean, it's because it is your job to uphold the Catholic Church in this college in these matters. And I don't think that's happening. And I don't think it's probably going to happen, but we're here anyways, so we can say we tried.
Other questions? Any other questions? Okay, Dr. Rice? Oh, sorry. No, we wanted to ask Ms. McMahon about the differences in the policies.
So the equal opportunity policy and the equal opportunity grievance procedure have recently been revised. The handbook went to press last summer, and in the meantime, we were vetting and revising the policies. It did change, and one of the things we've been trying to do is have the faculty and staff and student policies all reflect each other. And so when the policy was originally drafted and approved, It was with three panel members for each of those faculty, staff, and student grievances for equal opportunity purposes. The handbook went to press, and then we changed it to five representatives. And so we did change it for the faculty and staff policies and have those posted. We also changed it online for the student. At the same time, we have remiss to remember that it had already gone to press.
Okay,
so
well.
The hard copy had already been pressed out with three.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been following what's been actually in the print and in the press. So there indeed is a discrepancy.
Okay, so I would just, so because the copy of the student handbook I have open on my computer right now, I got from that Carol website very recently. It hasn't changed. I checked it, you know, just like a couple days ago. So was there any reason the online version of the student handbook, which is basically the same as the print version, except it's, you know, obviously just a file on the Carol website that can be changed. Any reason why that hasn't been updated? Is that just an oversight, mm-hmm. or?
If I understand Ms. McMahon right, it's because it's already in print in this, so they will update the printed handbook next year, next academic year, to reflect.
Could they not update the online version? Because there's an exact copy of the online of that handbook that available from the Carol website as a PDF.
But they will all be updated to be consistent
next year.
They were in the middle of changing.
And the fact remains though that if the new policy is five members, then why is this committee? You know, why was it not appointed with five members in the first place?
Because
the other issue.
She was following the policy that's in there.
So she was following the out-of-date policy, not the one she mailed me that details the policy.
Correct.
Which also
why?
You had the opportunity to postpone this hearing.
No, I didn't.
And you
We've already went over this.
To.
We already
yes.
went over this.
So
I didn't really have the opportunity.
We're not connected to the other hearing, so we don't know anything about timetables.
I know you
there,
do.
So
you have to. I mean.
Actually, we don't. It's two separate.
Okay, well then, how come Renee McMahon has? I mean, I have lots of emails where people like Renee McMahon and, you know, Marion Ward and people from both of the procedures have been talking with each other. I have plenty of evidence of that. So there's no reason why you guys wouldn't know what's going on unless you just chose
Renee
to be
might
misinformed.
Be talking with the others, but the three of us have not spoken. We don't even know who's on the other grievance committee. Don't have a clue.
It seems like that's the kind of thing you should research before coming in.
Actually,
the whole point is to have it separate.
Well, then there's been charges that have been moved around. Like, there were charges that started out in the student conduct process that were then shuffled over this process without really any means of being notified. Like, actually, less than a day before that other hearing, charges were moved around, and the people at the other hearing, the board there, were told to ignore them because they'd be focused on here. And it's the processes are linked. I am recording from the other hearing stating that they really, like, they don't know what they're doing because they never really have two processes at the same time. But they are sharing information. There's plenty of evidence of that. So if you guys don't know what's going on, then that's on you. That's not, that's your problem to deal with, not mine.
It's irrelevant.
It is relevant. It's totally relevant because both processes are inextricably linked at this point. Because stuff's been moving around between them so much.
All right, we're going to turn to Dr. Weiss for 1 second.
I just wanted to clarify, I'm not a doctor, but I appreciate it. I just wanted to say I was as a faculty member here at Carroll. I have been since 2011, and I am a co-advisor to the Gay Straight Alliance on campus. On the Friday that student Chloe Hendrickson came into contact with Ms. Gertner in Timberman Hall, I believe I was the first person she contacted. Just to say, hey, this is happening, what do we do? And I directed her immediately to administration, and administration proceeded to direct people to come to the campus and on behalf of the student so that she was not involved. And neither was I in that particular incident that happened that night. As a result of that initial text sent to me by Chloe, I spoke with several faculty members, both in my department, language and literature, and outside of my department. through email threads that I believe everyone is aware of, and then followed up. Several students contacted me, as well as a couple of alumni, to say what is going on, why is this happening, and what do we need to do to support students. And I respectfully told them, please stand by and to not take any action, and instead asked the GSA several weeks later to convene a meeting, in which we needed to do anyway because it was January. And we talked about several things at that meeting, but there was a larger presence than normal of people who came, community members as well, who wanted to be a part of that conversation, from local organizations and alumni and staff who were there to ensure that we were not talking poorly about other students, and handling the situation with dignity and kindness and compassion. And it was a good meeting, and I think that the number of people who contacted me represent enough people on campus to do a formal investigation.
So,
and that's
awesome. A few questions. I guess to start off with, could you describe why you felt these posters were offensive?
There were several posters in the particular posting that that was delivered to me. The one that I think set off the most alarm directly discussed homosexuals and said, quote, I want homosexuals to go to heaven. No, really, I do. And then I don't have what the rest of it says. That particular poster struck me as both kind of a double-edged sword. One that kind of struck me as homosexuals should be dead in order to go to heaven, and as well as pray poor in order to go to heaven.
I have a copy of the poster on my screen here if the board would like to see it.
And of course, you have to be dead to go to heaven. I'll be like, that's the kind of a, you have to die first.
Thank you.
So.
And students that I am here to represent, because they felt that it was threatening, perhaps, in the contemporary college culture. It's pretty scary to be a professor in light of events that have happened on college campuses across the United States in the last decade.
Could you please explain?
Well, I work in Idaho, and they allow guns on campus. And that is one of the reasons that I don't work in Idaho. But there have been a number of cases of students who have gone to grievance policies that have committed acts of violence against students and faculty as a result of grievance.
I have a question for the board to ask her. Like, what's the gun policy in Idaho schools have to do with anything? I'm just curious, like, where she's coming from with that.
Would you like me to answer?
Sure.
I also believe in Second Amendment rights, but colleges are places where discussions take place that are sometimes difficult and anxiety-inducing, and as a new teacher, I have definitely found myself fearful in college situations, and Idaho is one example of where guns are allowed on campus, and therefore I left the state in order to not teach there upon graduation.
Okay. Other questions?
I have another question you could ask her. So about the poster, I love gay people so much, I want them to go to heaven. You could ask her if she's, if she's aware of the, common Christian practice of praying that people go to heaven and wanting people to go to heaven because it's, a good thing to go to heaven.
I think Chelsea already explained why she felt that was threatening. So.
I don't think so.
The annotation.
Connotation. Could you tell us a little bit about the discussion at the GSA meeting, specifically as it regarded people's, in, as it regards people's reaction to the posters?
Several students wanted to inquire about the posters, ask who put them up. Several students wanted to respond by counter posters. I talked to staff ahead of the meeting who asked me to be diligent and temper the conversation and respect the privacy of Mr. Itner, and really encourage students to not respond as a means to either retaliate or arouse more anxiety and fear on campus. And so the conversation, it was the last thing that we talked about, and the students expressed their ideas about how they wanted to handle it, and within conversation by the end of the night, we agreed to not act, and that the best thing to do in our community was to pay attention to how others are feeling. And if somebody seems distressed or feels fear on campus, to accompany them walking and be an ear to listen to them.
One of our jobs is to vet this notion of objectively offensive and sufficiently serious. And at the GSA meeting, what was the tone in terms of how serious were people taking this? Was it considered a fairly mild grievance, a fairly mild concern, or considered a serious concern? And I realize this is hearsay, but
yeah.
Just trying to get a feel for it.
To give you an idea about my particular reaction to it, I contacted Kim Layton from the Price Foundation, which is a scholarship and grant generating organization for LGBTQ students, and she lives there locally, as well as alumni Mr. Rieger to attend the meeting. And because Rieger has been in security positions for an organization where LGBTQ issues are commonly addressed, as well as Kim Layton, I talked to them about 5 minutes ahead of time. We met outside O'Connell, and I said, I'm unsure what the situation may produce, and so I would prefer if one of you sit at the open door and another sit at the closed door, and made a plan for de-escalating if Eric was going to attend or try to disrupt the meeting, and also a plan for evacuation if somebody brought violence into the meeting.
I shouldn't actually say how serious people thought it was.
I was approached, or a student, all students who are in JSA will come in confidential, but a student talked to me about Mr. Whitner's conduct and courses previous to this, and I asked her if she had filed a complaint, and she said no, and I said, you know, that is procedure. If you feel like you need to file a complaint, please go through the process. She also wanted to put up the posters as kind of a retaliatory thing. The posters you may have seen on campus, they stand tall, be proud, kind of have a rainbow splash on them. And I asked her not to, kindly. Another student, pretty big feminist on campus, wanted to react as well. I kind of diffused that.
Sorry, are you saying the intensity of these reactions show how offended they were?
I think just concerned. They weren't angry and they weren't like visibly upset, but they were tense and sitting in groups and very bound up, it appeared. And by the things that they discussed with me, I realized that the people at the meeting were concerned about the campus, the posters, as well as the reaction to the posters. Okay.
I have a question you might want to pose. Like, how many people exactly like contacted her originally like with concerns, because that would seem like another metric. She just said some people, but how many was it exactly?
That's a fair question. Can you talk to us about how many people reached out to you?
I would say the people who reached out to me were probably free students initially after the first content was started. And then at the meeting, there were about 17, including two alumni. And then I also had three alumni contact me.
So
did any of the faculty also reach out to you or staff?
Yes. I would say three or four staff members reached out to me. And I'm sorry, I don't have that information available. I handed it to my office.
So it was less than 1% of the Carroll population seemed to have any kind of issue. About and half of 1%, actually. Like, even, you know.
All right. If there are no more questions, then we are ready to start bringing in witnesses. And we would like to start off by calling in Ms. Kelly Clark.
Yep, she couldn't make it. She has class right now, but we do have a short written statement from her. And also, she noticed something. So there's actually nothing in the rules about that she has to write everything to me. It just says that she's only allowed to consult with me and our witnesses, if we have any. So it's just there's nothing in the policy that says she has to write stuff on paper, as far as we can see. So maybe just want to check on that real quick.
You can make that. I mean, that's your call to make that rule. It doesn't need to be written down.
Because it would really, I mean, it's a really big hindrance if we can't, I'm having, you know, trouble, like, you know, sometimes she tries to write something fast and I don't even know exactly what she's trying to get at because it's, you know, she's trying to get it fast to keep this moving. I mean, it's a silly rule anyways. I don't know why it would be instituted in the first place.
It was our call to make that policy, and we have that authority to do it. So it's not.
Okay.
Where does it say that in there?
For the conduct of the meeting.
Yes, it doesn't have to be written down.
Where does it say that in here?
I'm not opposed to her withdrawing.
Should we talk about it? We've all voted.
Yeah, I think we just stick to the policy.
We're going to stick to the policy. Yep. Both advisors will communicate in writing.
In
writing.
Because that's not the policy. You just said that.
It doesn't need to be written in the policy.
But you just said you'd stick to the policy, then you're saying let's not stick to the policy.
When did I say this?
Just now.
No, we said we would stick to what we have already agreed upon.
No, you said we will stick to the policy.
Are you referring to Ms. Bain?
I'm referring to what you both just agreed on. And also, where in the policy does it say that you can limit it to just writing? It doesn't say you have the authority to limit it to just writing between people?
But the hearing committee sets the rules.
Where does it say that? Where does it say that you're allowed to set those rules? Because we're not seeing anything that says you can set that rule. I think we should stick to what is actually written down in the current version of the policy. You know, disregarding the fact that you guys have already violated it by not having five people on the board. I think we should try to stick as closely as we can to that, which would mean it's, you know, not making up rules on the fly.
Hardly on the fly. We came in with that as a rule.
Okay, well but it's not a rule.
Should we call the next witness?
No. Do you have a statement to read from Ms. Clark?
Yes, we do, but this is just, it's bothering me that you guys are making stuff up that isn't, that you don't have the authority to.
For instance, we made it a rule that there would be no interruptions. That's not in the policy.
Did you have the written statement that you wanted to read from Ms. Clark?
Yes, but first, I'd just like you to
you
find
have
where
the
in the
statement that you wanted to read from Ms. Clark.
Yes, I do.
Okay, let's hear it, please.
All right. I would like to point out first. So she did misremember, and wasn't able to contact her and get her clarification on this thing. So where it says, I just like where it says anti-Trump, that isn't what was actually on the poster as soon as Dreamer, because some of the posters that were put up, like one of the ones I put up in response to the other posters and things, they mentioned the word Trump, just as, you know, in other contexts and that. So they just to keep that little context in mind, there's nothing about like anti-Trump on them at all. Dear Review Committee, I have known Skylar Inner since he was 7 years old. I've had the opportunity to serve with him at the Cathedral of St. Helena as a sacristan. He volunteered as a senior server with me for approximately 2 to 3 years as a youth. I also had the opportunity to supervise Skylar at Good Samaritan Ministries and Thrift Store as the volunteer coordinator when I was employed there. He is a gifted young man and was always willing to work hard, complete a task given to him, and worked well with others. I'm writing this letter to the committee regarding Skylar's involvement in hanging posters on campus at the request of Skylar. I remember leaving Sipperman Hall after a long day of classes and bumping into Skylar near the south entrance hallway at the bottom of the stairs. He was upset about some posters that were being placed on the poster boards around campus that incited anti-Trump sentiments. It was the posters that say Love Trump's Hate, I believe, that were put up without authorization. I can't recall the exact words of the conversation between us. As I said previously, it was a long day of classes for myself. What I can recall about the gist of the conversation was the difficulty of being a Catholic student on a Catholic campus and his conviction to defend his Catholic identity and faith. I listened to him and encouraged standing his ground about how he identifies with being a practicing Catholic and in good standing with his own church community. He then left to print posters in opposition to the anti-Trump posters. I then ran into a fellow student being in another conversation in the hallway. As I was ready to leave, Skylar came back with his poster. He asked me to read it. I read it, spoke to him about the fact that I understood some of where he was coming from in his convictions, but advised that he use caution when hanging these posters. I advised there's a protocol for hanging posters and advised him to speak to Patrick Harris or Patty White for permission. I left him with this advice, cautioned him about hanging them, and left him to his own devices. Skylar is a bright young man, still in the stages of forming his own identity. In his search for his own identity, he is still exploring where he fits into society, the outcomes, and experimenting with lifestyle choices, not only for himself, but within the society he lives in. In addition, there are pressures and rebellion that still come with his age. I believe he is committed to his beliefs and trying to open dialogue with his greater community to foster communication, whether it be positive or negative, while forming his own identity. I appreciate your time in reading this letter. If you have any further questions regarding my witness to Skylar's hanging of the posters, feel free to contact me at above contact information. Sincerely, Kelly Clark. If you don't have contact information here, I can get this a copy of this to you if you need it.
Well, we can't ask her any questions, so why don't we call Kelly personally?
Can we go get her?
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you for coming to the hearing. As you, I think, are aware, this is an EO Grievance Committee hearing. Mr. Ettner has appealed the college's finding that the posters he put up created an objectively offensive and sufficiently severe environment that sanctions were imposed, and he's appealing both the procedure for the getting to that conclusion and the sanctions. So we'd like to ask you a few questions, if that's okay. We understand you were the first documented person to forward this on to the Title IX officer, Ms. McMahon.
I didn't know that.
Okay. If you could explain to us how you came to the decision to forward this.
I think I printed it. So I was actually traveling, 6th to 7th of January, so I was traveling, and I got an email, Chloe Hendrickson, and it was actually Vice President Evans and Patrick Harris, about some disturbing flyers she saw around campus, and she included those, and I've never actually met Chloe and since I was traveling and I was off campus and I went to Dr. Evans, I just figured it was all opportunity. And then on Monday when I got back to campus, I got another email from Jennifer Bolinka that she was teaching classes and flyers. And I just figured we have a planning coordinator, a person who can figure this stuff out and investigate this stuff for us on this time.
Okay, and why specifically Title IX?
Renee and I have worked together on these
saw, but over this last year, we've had pretty intensive training on where to go when you come across something that might be disturbing, and who really on this campus is safe to handle that. And that would be Renee.
And how did you come to the conclusion that you thought it might be disturbing?
First it was the language that Chloe used when she wrote her first email, that she felt offended. And I was even before I looked at the attachments. So that made me feel like, I need to get this to somebody who can pick through, parse through the details of it. And then I've heard this phrase before. I love gay people so much I want them to go to heaven, but I've heard them in a negative connotation, like as in it might refer to kill them. And so that's the one that made me think, oh, it really is yours.
Okay, what can you explain that background?
I wish I could tell you where the first time I heard such a derogatory comment, but I just, I can't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
I have just had heard it before, and know that it sounds like it's a lovely thing to go to heaven, but by way of death might not be a good thing for me, it might not be a good thing to happen. So I just had seen that before in a negative way.
Other than Chloe and Dr. Goenka, had you heard from others, maybe not even necessarily through email, but others that had expressed to you that they felt that the posters had been offensive?
No, I was off campus while this whole thing was happening.
Okay.
So by the time I got back on Monday, I was really surprised that the posters were back up, that Jennifer Goenka had to deal with this again, that it hadn't. I am even now surprised that this hasn't gotten through just before I emailed this to you. Particularly since it said it was the first address to Dr. Evans and Patrick Carras, I think that for those things that hustled it to me. Or is it going to be?
Okay.
I'd like to point, the only time the actual phrase, I love gay people so much I want them to go to heaven, appears on the internet is on my website. Just so you know, that phrase only appears, that phrase only appears on the PDF on my website of the poster.
And so I have a picture that Chloe sent at the bulletin board for a second.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming, and thank you for your patience over the last hour.
I think the initial thing that I wanted to ask was if you could talk a little bit about your initial reaction to this thing, and maybe if and why you found this offensive.
Okay. So, you just want to know my reaction?
Mm-hmm.
So, surprise, shock, and concern for what I felt. Can you elaborate on that? I was concerned about how students would receive the content of the posters. I was concerned it would be offensive and hurtful to students on campus and other members of the queer community, and wanted to do what I could to ease that.
Did you observe any reactions to the posters from other students that had been passing by, or other faculty staff, sort of people that had noticed the posters when they were passing by?
And this was a time of day that was, the building wasn't frequented. It was after classes on a Friday. And the only other people with me were friends of mine, and they were concerned and shocked as well.
Then over time, as conversations have taken place, what were the reactions of people you've talked to in terms of not a big deal, offensive, concern?
A lot of people
support the posters.
Concern, I think, is the best word for a lot of people. Were a lot of the students that I heard talking about it were, well, they were concerned for the, you know, their friends and people who these posters might affect very directly, and for whom, like, these topics are very sensitive. They wanted Carol to be a place where he didn't have to encounter attitudes that are hurtful and offensive to them.
One of the statements we've heard is that because, and we're not debating the degree to which they are, especially in this question, because these are based in Catholic doctrine, they should therefore be certainly less hurtful than if they were random threats issued by some random, you know, random wording. Did this come up in your conversations at all?
A lot of the people I spoke to found the discourse very aggressive and not necessarily sympathetic.
I do have a question for her, since she keeps saying a lot. Like, let me have her elaborate. How many is a lot? Because it seems like it's just a phrase that's being thrown around that kind of holds some, you know, weight, but it's not, you know, actually substantial evidence. It just makes people, it'll make people feel like it's, you know, a big deal when it might not be. It could just be. So could you have her, like, maybe try to quantify that a bit? Because I could say there is a lot of people that I met that are in favor of the posters. So.
Would you care to comment on how many?
How many people I heard talk about it?
Yeah, that you were in those conversations.
Okay, I can only give a property approximation. I'd say anywhere from 10 to 20.
Can I ask about the difference of the 45 and what led to it?
Okay. Oh. I would like to hear more about the incident. I would like to.
Okay, let's do it. To narrate that day. So I was in Superman Hall with a couple of friends who run actually the Carol College for a literary magazine, and we were just having our Friday afternoon meetings for the magazine, and we were leaving the building and saw the posters up on the boards and public boards, and we were like, is this what should we do? Should we talk to the members of the administration? Because this is aggressive. This is potentially going to be very hurtful to a lot of people. My friend specifically began to take the posters down. And I wasn't sure what the proper way to respond in this situation was, and I thought I would leave it in the hands of the Carroll administration. And so I simply took a photo of the posters, and around that time we did see Skylar. He saw us taking down the posters and demanded that we give them back. And I personally stood back and was like, I'm going to let the Carroll administration deal with this problem. And my friends wanted to throw the posters away. I did tell him that I was going to talk to the administration, and I asked him for his name. And he handed me his business card, which I showed to the administration as well. This is a picture of the posters. And from there, I let Patrick Harris, President Chucky, handle the situation.
Can you tell me, and it's probably mostly related to the one poster that says, I love these people so much, I want them to go to heaven, this is not a bad thing. Did anyone express fear or trepidation from that poster?
From that specific poster?
Mm-hmm.
Probably not that specific poster.
About any poster or about the posters in
there? There were a couple of the other posters were, I can't remember exactly what they said. Okay.
I think they're double-sided, so.
I did not see this poster. I did see this one.
That was in response to the Love Trumps Hate posters that were hung up without authorization.
This one that my the people I was particularly disconcerted by.
Okay. Have you yourself had Title IX or Equal Opportunity Training?
I have not.
So what drove your decision to go to the exact people that you went to?
The exact people that I went to? I knew that Patrick Harris was the one who approves all postings in public spaces and on boards. So I thought he would be the right person to consult when it came to material, like whether these spaces are being misused or not. Mm-hmm. You should be alerted. And I reached out to Chelsea because she is the head of GSA, and if this is going to be, if certain people who are going to be most impacted by it are people that Chelsea knows and is a topic that Chelsea knows how to navigate. So I reached out to Chelsea. I also CC'd or also sent an email to Thomas Evans because he oversees everything in the school. So I thought that would be wise. So.
So, if you just give us a second here, we're trying to find a pertinent thing here. I'm trying to find it somewhere. We have a lot of stuff here. Server. I'm trying to download it, but it's not working because it's tethering too slow. So I'm having trouble finding the exact thing, but there is, I believe you guys probably have it in your evidence packets or whatever you got. I think I got it from this process where Patrick Harris recommended not taking down the posters. So that's it's.
I haven't seen
anything like that. Let's see. We have it in here somewhere, mm-hmm. Don't we? I'm pretty sure we do.
Yeah. Okay, we're all set. Thank you very much for.
No. We do have a couple other things. It's just slowing us down. When you insisted for ridiculous reasons that she has to write every actually for no reason that yet she has to write everything to me. Yeah, that one, that's a PDF.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know that one. Okay, well, there's... Because I did get a PDF, but it's not download. It didn't download properly. So it's on my server, but not completely on my computer. That's the thing. Because I do have this thing right here. Oh, I think that's the thing that has... a lot of the email, those emails that we were looking at in it, but it didn't download properly. I don't know where the full PDF went. And my server isn't loading it.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to clarify here. When Corey contacted me, my response was to contact Patrick and then Tom as well, or have her contact him. Patrick initially said, take down the posters, and then immediately sent back another email that said, quote, I don't want you to be put in a bad situation. I'm heading to Stowe now to take down the posters myself.
So there was a.
Is this what you're referring to?
Yes, I believe so, yes.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah. We also, so. Okay, so did you guys get the copy of the original email that Colby sent to Tom Evans, Patrick Harris, and CC, Chelsea Rice, and Sumitri Gupta?
I believe we did, yeah.
Did, all right, because the email says the student posting homophobic material. And I was just wondering if you'd want her to, like, address why she thinks it's homophobic material. And since this is the, also to point out, since this is the poster that she had the most issue with, I mean, if it says gay marriage is morally evil, but then it clarifies and said all people deserve respect, this does not mean all activity should be allowed. So if you could have her comment on that, since it's, I mean, it seems to be very clear that this isn't, you know, against gay people or any people at all, really.
Okay, and in fact, that sounds like it's related to your first question. Could you comment for the committee on why you concluded that this was homophobic?
Calling a certain person evil because
it didn't gay marriage. It calls an activity evil, like like killing Jews is evil.
Excuse me.
I mean,
those two. A conversation between you and the witness.
Okay. And
calling a I feel like a Chelsea would be more articulate and can speak on this in a more precise way.
Well,
I mean, she did say they were homophobic.
Excuse me. Yeah. Excuse me. We're interested in just your personal reaction, and we can, as you suggest, get a more technical definition from Dr. Rice. Mm-hmm. Seeing as you used the word in the email,
right?
What led you to use that word?
It was equating homosexuality with evil.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, was it? Does the board think it was? Because the wording's very clear.
I think we're done.
Yeah, we're all set.
Thank you.
Father Mark?
Yeah, I think Father Mark could probably comment further on that, actually, so, as well, if you want him to.
Mark, thanks for coming today. I'm sure you know Jennifer Bingham, and I don't know if you know Lisa Marcus.
Hi.
We're the hearing officers conducting this, and we've got a few questions for you.
Sure.
To the extent that Dr. Rice or Ms. Rittner also have questions for you, they'll route those through us and we'll determine if that we ask.
Okay. Perfect.
When did you first become aware of the posters?
I became aware of the posters on the date. I don't know off the top of my head. I mean, it was a conversation. I was contacted, I think, by you, as well as there was a follow-up with Nina and Kathy Day.
So it was after that?
Yeah.
Okay.
After that, I didn't know anything. Oh, the reason I actually knew, sorry, I didn't know, it's just been a while. I got a phone call from Monsignor Neal, who called me and said, what's going on? And I said, I don't know what's going on.
I was in the room when Monsignor made that phone call, just to,
I'll follow that up. You might have the date. I can't remember. I know where I put the conversation.
It was a Thursday.
It was by Jasmine, because I was trying to get ready for the trip.
So how did you follow up on this request?
So I said, Monsignor, I'll follow up with the people involved in the situation. I had a cabinet meeting in a couple hours, and I talked to Nina and Annette and Kathy Day after that.
And then a subsequent conversation with Renee.
Subsequent conversation with Renee, following up on that, then Annette talked to me one other time. Because she had a question about how, just how best to pursue this with the different relationships that we're involved.
And have you had a conversation with Mr. Rittner on this?
No.
Didn't we talk briefly on the phone? I think because I was in a room with Monsignor when he called.
So you left me a message. I called back, and then you didn't respond.
I mean, I basically was talking, though, because I was explaining all to Monsignor as he was talking to you, so it was, you know.
So I was just, I was just in, yeah, I didn't know you were in the room.
Okay, that's sufficient information. I guess we'll start with the question of the sanctions. Are you familiar with the sanctions that the EO grievance put forward?
For Skyler?
For Skyler.
Don't know if I know the latest.
When Father Mark and I were visiting about the messaging in the Catholic doctrine, one of the things I asked him is if he would be willing to talk to Skyler about some of the Catholic teaching just in the full context of some of the things Father Mark and I talked about. And he said he would be willing to do that, but I didn't disclose what the final sanctions were with Father Mark. The other thing I thought was interesting that Father Mark and I talked about was this Bishop Barron Rubin report. And so while Father Mark and I had discussions about parts of the sanctioning, I didn't talk to or ask about the sanctions. Mm-hmm. So that's what he knows about sanctions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Father Mark, can you give us your impression of the posters?
Well, yeah. I mean, so there's different ones, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some that can be taken one way or another. There's some that are quoting the catechism, so I wouldn't lump them all into one category, right? So my impression, part of me always wants to know, like, what is the end in mind? Right, so what was the rationale behind putting up the poster? What was the goal of that poster? I can't speculate on what that is. I think that's important for you guys to discern that and have that conversation. My impression, especially in this context, this area, I was reminded of a phrase that one of my scripture profs talked to me about when I was in seminary, and he simply said this. He said, text without a context is a pretext. A text without a context is a pretext. And so with the catechism, pulling one aspect out and just having that with no context is not an effective way to evangelize or to explain the Catholic faith. Because it all holds together as a whole. You can't just isolate one thing and just say, well, this is this. It exists in this nexus of all sorts of relationships, right? So in that sense, I think as an evangelization tool, if that was the goal, it is a poor way to explain what the church actually teaches.
So if he wants to look at this, we have the page of these posters here, like all of them. If you wanted to look at that and maybe comment on them at all specifically, so. The ones that say not posted, that's because I was suspended before I had the chance to post them, but I didn't print them.
Yeah, so I mean, there's some that, like I said, I don't think they should all be lumped in the same category, right? So, if there was Trump's gay rights / wrongs, someone's going to interpret that radically differently. To me, that's a very different type of question than something that's coming from the catechism.
I'd like to clarify that I put that up kind of as a mildly humorous. I was poking fun at the fact that a lot of those posters that were put up saying "Love Trump's hate." I was just kind of ridiculing the fact that they used Trump. I thought it was just kind of funny. They weren't really supposed to be like a statement about Catholic teaching. They're just, you know, kind of like, oh, you're kind of being dumb putting up these posters, you know, and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of silly.
And I'll just kind of limit my, I guess, my conversations to these ones about the catechism, because I think that's why I'm here to try to talk about what the church teaches. I fully embrace and engage the reality that the church's stances on sexuality really stand at odds with a lot of things that are considered normative in today's culture. That's simply the reality. It's an objective. Church has some very objective teachings. And there's reasons for that that I think can be engaged in discussion and disagreed about and responded to. This is not the way to begin that conversation, in my opinion. Because of the fact that there is no context, furthermore, there is no relationship. So anything that the church has to do with sexuality always goes back to an interpersonal norm. That's the basis of the church's teaching. It's always interpersonal. And it's a personal norm, truly. And who the person is vis-a-vis the person of Christ, right? So everything the church teaches about sexuality has to come within the context of relationship. And this could just be, inexperience or whatnot, but when I work with people, even people who disagree with me and the stance that the church has, it's always wise pastorally to start with relationship.
Yeah, well, and this was the first poster saying, gay marriage is morally evil, all people deserve respect, as nominal actions should be allowed. Mm-hmm. So the catechism posters didn't really start it.
Let's just use that as an example. So if you look at that, the first statement is gay, quote unquote, marriage is morally evil.
Well, because gay marriage doesn't exist.
Skylar, try to imagine someone who doesn't agree with that position. Right, and you're trying to help them understand a little bit more about your position and the church's position. The very first thing, even on the text there, that you basically shout at them is that they're engaging in something that's morally evil. And that's not the first step. Order is really important in engaging people, just in general, and especially people who might have a different opinion or stance.
Yeah, right?
So for me, the first thing that I want someone to hear, regardless of where they stand on this particular issue, the first word that the church speaks actually is your love. The first word, right? And then from there, other things begin to open up. But if you don't start with that, and you start with something like that, probably the experience you have is people get really offended and the walls go up immediately.
Yeah, I've got anonymous death threats from his son.
Yes, thank you.
Does that help?
Yep.
I don't know that you guys can stop me or keep me moving forward.
We want to move on to the two things that are at the heart of what we're inquiring about. The finding that these were objectively offensive to some people. They don't all need to be offensive to all people, but that some of them were objectively offensive and sufficiently seriously so to some people to warrant a new finding. We're trying to recreate that process. And then the second question we're going to ask is, do you feel that the sanctions suggested are reasonable or unreasonable? Mm-hmm. And any comments you have on that?
Sure. So hard for me to know if who's going to be offended by what and in what way, right? So that's hard for me to speak to. If I look at the ones in the catechism, again, what I would reiterate is if you pull something out of context, absent of relationship, it's never going to be very effective in engaging a conversation or facilitating a conversation. So I would very much disagree on the approach. Without disagreeing on the teaching. But the problem is, this teaching is not complete in any way, shape, or form. So you can't pull one sentence and present something that's multifaceted, right? And furthermore, the catechism isn't a complete teaching either. The catechism is a bare-bones structure of what the church teaches. It's very akin to the beams we saw going into the chapel a few months ago. It's very structurally sound, it's important, but there is so much more work that needs to go into that structure before, one, it's even presentable, let alone it's functional, right? And so that's the same with the Catechism of the Catholic Church. That's why the Catechism has footnotes to thousands of more pages of documents that flesh out the teaching so that it can become presentable to people and understandable. So that's my issue with the ones in the catechism. The other ones, I can absolutely see why someone would be offended. Trump's gay rights / wrongs. Reasonably, in my opinion, someone could be offended by that.
Those were only hung up next to the posters that were retaliation to my original posters.
Yeah.
And I would also like to point out that, a whole catechism, which is about a book about that thick, can't hold all the teachings of the church, then, there's no reason to expect a poster would ever get anywhere near it, so, no matter what's on it.
Yeah. And also no reason to put up one piece of the church teaching on a poster and expect that to accomplish anything good.
It's not like your father can address a full, Catholic, all the church teaching in every homily he does either.
Okay, and comments on the sanctions?
I think the sanctions, from my opinion, are reasonable. Skylar, I would love to talk with you about not just the your stance on this, but for me, it really is important to understand the reason.
Yeah, we actually.
We're not having a conversation.
I don't think Father remembers, but there actually was. I think it was 2 years ago, roughly. I did have a conversation with him after evening mass here at Carroll, about homosexuality, because one of my philosophy, theology professors, had kind of gone off on a rant in class about how he is pro gay marriage, and how he. And he actually left a talk. He actually had given extra credit to the class for going to a talk, and then he had actually walked out of that talk because he didn't agree with what the speaker was teaching about the Catholic Church. And so I actually have had a conversation with Father about homosexuality in the past. From what I recall from that, he advised me to just go talk to the professor myself. Because there wasn't much he could do.
Well, and to engage in a mature, reasonable way. I think everybody's. But I'm happy to sit down. Yes, I think Bishop Barron does a great job of showing how to engage someone who completely disagrees with Bishop's stance and the stance of the Catholic Church. I think it's a great lesson in how to engage someone who has a different view. And these other things look reasonable to me as well. So I think they're reasonable for my opinion.
Okay.
I think we're fine. Thank you so much for spending some of your day.
Good luck. God bless.
Thank you.
And now Renee McMahon. Yes. Let's start with the sanctions and then move back to the procedure.
Okay.
How did you design the sanctions?
I designed the sanctions based on, I think, the interpretation and perhaps misinterpretation of not only what the posters said and how people took them, but also how I think what Father Mark said they were, how people interpreted them when they saw them. So while trying not to disagree, but to respect Skylar's messaging, but to try to understand a way such that he could understand how people might have taken offense. So my approach was not to disagree with his belief, but to try to somehow garner an understanding of how people were feeling when they saw the messages. It was difficult to try to figure out how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to point out her report actually does say a lot of stuff that are contradictory to my beliefs, her original investigation report. And I kind of highlighted it in the appeal. And did you guys get a copy of the appeal I made of that report?
The marked up version?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I figured that, I thought that was the best way to do it because of all the mistakes and things that are against my beliefs that I found in it. So it's funny that she'd say that, she wasn't trying to criticize my beliefs or anything. But she ended up doing a lot of that in her report.
Okay.
She mentioned the Pope changing church teaching on homosexuality. He doesn't have the authority to do that, even so. It's all kinds of things.
Okay. Our questions right now are about the sanctions, and then we'll go back to the procedure. Okay. So there are, if I'm because I don't have them in front of me. Four elements to the sanction?
Correct.
Yes, thank you. So how did you choose each one?
So to read and confirm that he has understood and knows what the equal opportunity policy actually says, what I was trying to understand is if he had an appreciation for what we were trying to do, what I so doggedly tried to do in this equal opportunity process was to run it very separately than the student conduct. And while the paths maybe seeped in, I really tried to keep those very separate. So I was hoping to confirm with Skylar that he really understood what the equal opportunity issue and grievance was about. Second, again, was Bishop-Barron's Rubin report. I thought was beautifully done in terms of the messaging versus how to embrace the rest of Catholic teaching. What he points to is, can I see the posters again real quickly? I'm sorry, I don't have them in front of me. This one, perhaps? Yeah, he speaks directly to, if we say gay marriage is morally evil, the Catholic Church has a real problem taken out of context. And much of what Father Mark talked about in terms of, you know, homosexual persons are called to chastity, while these are part of catechism, again, I believe that Bishop Barron's Rubin report, Bishop Barron has a very eloquent way of saying, while this is Catholic teaching, here is how the Catholic faith embraces people in love and in understanding and all children of Christ, and we all have blemishes. And he goes on and on about how to embrace people and bring them along to the Catholic teaching. But we have a real issue and a real problem if what people take away and try to shout at people is that they're morally evil or that they're intrinsically disordered, and those sorts of messages are not part of what
I never
Catholic
said those messages. I never said that.
That's what was, you know.
No, it says no. You're mixing up people versus things they do.
So the messaging themselves and how people interpreted them when I talked to them, that was
stupid.
What I was trying to tease apart with Skylar, is exactly what he is saying.
Okay.
You know, how do you get that message across to people that embraces the Catholic Church without offending them with some of the fundamentals of the catechism? Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, homosexuality disorder, just as much as, like, say, autism is disordered. So, and I can say that too. I actually am on the autism spectrum, so I'm allowed to say that in this case.
So, with Father Mark, again, same sort of thing. He is the Carroll chaplain. This is a Carroll issue with the students with Catholic beliefs, and so I felt that appropriate. And then this last sanction is actually one that Annette tweaked a little, and I really appreciated. That was the civil discourse piece and how to communicate discourse. Not belief or not belief, but how do you communicate and embrace civil discourse? And clearly, Skylar has a very strong opinion on how he feels about this, and he has every right to do so. That's not at all what I would say is that the issue here, but how do you address and communicate effectively those beliefs in a society and in a societal community way?
Thank you. Moving then back to the procedure, you've seen what Skylar has objected to. Would you say in hindsight that there were any procedural issues in what you did in coming to your conclusion, not regarding the funding of this committee?
No. Procedurally, no. I mean, I interviewed people, I wrote what I heard them to say, I took notes in terms of being thorough. I believe I captured the essence of the Carroll response. I think I captured Skylar's response. You know, he may disagree with how I interpreted some of those interviews, but procedurally.
In terms of procedures, is this something that's standard? Is this something that you've personally done before? Is there an objective standard you use in coming to your conclusions?
The preponderance of evidence standard is whether or not it was likely to have occurred. So that pushes it, it's pretty hard to have a 50-50 split on these things. So given the testimony that people who came forward, who I talked to, it's more than likely to have occurred that people were objectively offended. So, yes, that is a standard that I'm aware of, I've been trained on, and have decided each both ways.
Can I point out, there's no such thing as objectively offensive for anything. Something's, Father Mark was in here saying he can't comment on if these were offensive because it's different for every person. So saying it's something objectively offensive, that just, all that really means is that all the people you talk to happen to think the same thing was offensive. Doesn't mean it's objective, because being offended is not objective at all, because there's nothing that is objectively offensive. To you can always find someone that it doesn't find a particular thing offensive.
Is that language is in the law, though?
It's
objectively offensive?
It is standard policy. I can't remember if it's in the law, but it is policy. We've talked about when we've looked at the equal opportunity policy before, and it does provide for some latitude in interpretation. But if you're objective and you're reasonable, you can take a measure of offensiveness.
Mm-hmm. See, because I'm not sure people have been objective and completely reasonable in this process.
Okay.
There's lots of loaded language in her report that would seem to think that she had that she was on the not my side. Things, just the wording she used.
We'll take all those factors into account as we come forward.
And I went back and reviewed Skylar's comments in the context of my report, and some of those were taken either quoted with notes or out of emails, because I did know he took offense to some of the stronger language, and I went back and checked on were those my words or were those words that came from my investigation, and many, if not all, came from the report that people provided.
Because some of them weren't quoted, though.
Okay.
I mean, the fact that they weren't quoted, like something like saying, a Carroll College student, Skylar Innerhead, declares strong anti-gay and anti-marriage sentiments. If that was from an email or something, that should have been in quotes, but the way it is, it seems to be tainting the neutrality of that report by making it seem like that's the words of the report and not the words of just hearsay or someone that was just complaining about the issue. Because it wasn't ever made clear, which I think makes it biased.
I'd like to get to the question that Ms. Stertner has raised several times before. We've seen a good deal of evidence. Of what order of magnitude, a range, number of people did you get communications from? And then more precisely, how many people did you speak to in the course of the investigation?
Oh boy, I didn't count things. I could find that information for you and follow up with you. It was the alarming response, I think, and also the numbers that came in. And like Kelly, I was also out of town when it came through. But it was the tenor of the reports and how people were feeling that I felt needed to be investigated. It was the fear. It was the offensiveness to the messaging. It was, we don't feel safe as a community because we felt targeted as a gay community. Those are the types of sentiments and why I felt it was important to investigate.
Okay. I think any time there's anything going on anywhere, at least a few people are going to be upset about it. I mean, people can just find things to complain about, even if they don't have anything to complain about. Her words at one point at the original meeting was that her email blew up, but I've never really gotten evidence of her email blowing up with, that would imply at least dozens of reports, enough to fill up a screen of emails.
We're capable of enough Yes, I think we're ready for our recess.
Okay.
We want to set a time, at least 5 minutes, so people don't use the bathroom.
Yeah, the agenda does say 10 minutes, I think, so if it's the final recess on there.
Yes, it is. So.
I think 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, 5 minutes will be sufficient for us.
Because you want this back.
Thank you.
This is mine.
All right. So we'd like some time to talk, the three of us in private, if you could.
Do you want me to follow up on?
Yes, I remember. That would be great.
Reality because they work at a college, not in the real world, apparently.
I guess.
You said this to me before.
Like, how can that be appropriate in any workplace? I mean, seriously, like, that's really offensive.
When anyone's a social justice warrior.
I mean, that's really offensive. So it looks like the light was off in there, but it looks like you can just see the vote part, but then there's, like, a solid color on the bottom there. I think it's really funny. I feel like it made a difference in the world. I have mail left to deliver. I'm going to see a Girl Scouts at 5:30.
Yeah. You think you're going to wait to deliver the decision until after I get the other appeal response and then I'll just throw it out?
Because the point of this isn't it? The sanctions are stupid.
Yeah.
You could have done the sanctions.
I did that's most of them while doing the appeal.
I understand that, but I mean, that's not the point of this. The point of this is to actually just talk to people instead of just being railroaded.
Yeah, well, we were kind of stupid to think that it'd actually be reasonable.
I didn't think anything.
Well,
I
at least they wouldn't at least let us
do it.
Yeah, well, I don't know why it's leading them to let us talk about anything.
Well, I also don't understand, if you can't discuss your intent, then what do you discuss? Like,
well, because intent doesn't matter, it's what people think about it. What other people think.
So then there's no such thing as hate crime.
Well, no, it's a hate crime when someone else does something.
If you include your intent here, then I bet you a lot of people in there believe that, like, hate crime legislation is appropriate. But that's all about intent. It's not at all about the action.
Is it 259.
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
And it's now 3. Thank you.
the last minute.
Well, I know. It might just be Nate, but Lando might be working. But Warren's going to come and set up the projector.
Yeah, at least the boards and things we do are fair. Yeah. And not framed. Do you guys want a copy of Kelly Clark's statement?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'll send that to you as a PDF. You have to say. What's your email address? Just
where first you initial, last name, D. Pavlakis. D-A-V-L-A.
Oh, okay. Looks like it's actually showing up in my autocomplete. You must have been CC'd on something. Or at some point in at some point across my three email accounts on my computer.
Right.
So.
Yeah. On behalf of the committee, I would like to thank everyone. We've conferred and we feel like we have the information we need to review what we have to review and come to a conclusion. So we thank you all for taking so much of your day to be here for this. And with that, the hearing is closed.
Thank you.
Well, it says actually, it has on here, I think, for final questions.
Yes, we have no final questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
Also, I can point out, just was really quick. Yeah, my mother. I didn't actually really, I don't think it really had much more. But she was actually listed as a witness as well. It's not really a big deal. I just like to just kind of point that out. One of those, another example of a procedural error.
Oh no, it's not an error. Actually, we have a right to speak to whatever witnesses we wanted to. It's all
right. Is there testimony that Skylar would like to ask from his mom and this?
I want the hearing's over.
Thank you.